So we had seen how Esther was taken into the king's harem, and poor he guy has to deal with all these spoiled brats, all these girls who think they're going to be queen. And Esther, she's not interested in being queen. So he puts Esther in the top room, and we said he gave Esther all the girls, and Esther gets the seven girls who would help her, and she names each one after the days of the week so that she knows what day of the week it is. We described how Esther is sitting in a bath of olive oil for 6 months so that her skin is hairless and soft, and 6 months in a bath of perfume. And we said we would notice how our sages point out both the good and the bad. They tell us what to learn at the same time that they bash someone. And that's very unique. Chazal will tell us all the bad things about Esav. That day that Esav comes from the field, Esav just did all these terrible, hideous crimes. Yet our sages say, learn from his kibud avim. Learn. So Chazal always gave us that balance, that no one is completely black. You could learn from everyone. There's something you could learn from everyone. Even Amalek, you know. It's very interesting. This really came home by me. About 13, 14 years ago, back in the Oslo Accords. So there's someone who I'm close to who was discussing the Oslo Accords with me. And they said to me, look at how ridiculous Arafat is. He keeps saying ridiculous claims, and at the end, the world buys into it because he keeps making the ridiculous claims. You keep at it, and you say it with a straight face, and you say it like you deserve it, and you bang on the table, so eventually people come to your ballpark. You don't move to theirs. And I heard it, you know, I was thinking about it. And then he came to me to consult with me about a certain Din Torah he had. And then he said to me, you know, I'm learning from Arafat in this Din Torah. I decided I'm taking that course. I'm going against the other guy, and I'm going to make extreme claims the other way. Meaning he owed the other guy $2 million, and he came to the court case and said, you owe me $5 million. So he didn't think he owed the other guy $5 million, but he figured, I'm gonna play the Arafat game. The other guy was making exorbitant claims. He figured I'd bring him to fair ground by going the other way. So he comes without batting an eyelash, and he comes to the court case, and he got his way. He got his way. He put together some kind of claim, you know, like Arafat did. And he didn't get his $5 million. But he ended up where he thought was fair, because he was able to bring the other guy to believe that he really believed that he deserved the $5 million. Meaning, so the other guy was sure he was, you know. So he ended up with what he thought was fair. The guy settled out of court. But yeah, from Arafat you could learn something too. And our sages always told us, don't be blind to what you can learn from people. So about Ahasuerus, the same thing. In a minute we're going to see. Chazal tells, look what a terrible person he was. He took married women. Any woman he wanted, he took. If she was married, if she was single, it didn't matter. He ruled the world. No one could say anything to him. At the same time, Chazal tell us that. Chazal also tell us, look, he had derech eretz. He only brought the girls in at night. By day he was doing business the way he should. Learn derech eretz from Ahasuerus. That Ahasuerus, he's raping girls every night. But Chazal say, yeah, but there's something positive about it. Because he's only doing it at night. He could have been doing it all day, right? But he didn't. By day, he was productive. At night, this is what he did. So, okay, that's brilliance. That's Chazal telling us, see the facts. See what's right, see what's wrong. Don't be blinded. Sometimes we can be blinded by the load we feel to what someone does. Chazal say, no, maintain the balance. So Esther remains silent on what her nationality is, where she was born. We brought the medrash that Esther was 75, and Michael doesn't like that, so we'll stick to the pshat, that she was a young woman. And Mordechai told her not to tell. And here there's a very interesting point in the medrash. What does the pasuk say? Esther doesn't tell her nationality because Mordechai said so. What is that really telling us? That Esther didn't see the need. Esther did not appreciate what Mordechai appreciated. But if Mordechai said so, ki Mordechai tziva aleha, Mordechai commanded her asher lo tagid, that she shouldn't tell. So Why isn't she telling? Why doesn't Mordechai want her to tell? So last week we described, according to Pshat, they realized the danger that this man was capable of killing her nation too. If he gets upset at her, he killed Vashti, so he's capable of killing her and her nation. Another understanding is that he realized that she would be the source of a great salvation. And we're going to see that it came into... It was very good for us that no one knew what nation she was from, as the story plays itself out. A third understanding is that Mordechai realized she was supposed to be queen, and Mordechai was scared that if he would know what nation she was from, then no one would allow him to marry her. So that gives us two different outlooks onto the story. One outlook is the way Rashi keeps pushing, that Mordechai was doing everything to keep her out of the palace. The other outlook among the commentaries is that Mordechai was interested. He said, you know, we need this. This could save all of Israel. Now, we have to understand what's going on here. There's a machlokas in the Shas. If a non-Jew lives with a Jewish woman, is a child a bastard? According to Rabbi Akiva, he is. We don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva. We paskin that, no, if the mother's Jewish, the baby's Jewish. He can't marry a Kohen if his father's not a Jewish person. But, say that. She can't marry a Kohen. But other than that, you know, it's not the greatest yichus, but the child is Jewish. But that's not so simple. According to our sages, Esther was married to Mordechai. If Esther was married to Mordechai, she's a married woman. So the Talmud asks, why didn't she fight it and give up her life? So the Talmud tells us that we have a concept called kal kaolam, that if a woman doesn't do anything, she's passive, and the man is doing everything, so even though it is a biblical prohibition that one must give up their life for, not when they're inactive. When they don't do anything, so then a woman, when it's being done against her will, and she's not playing an active role, so then for that she doesn't have to give up her life. To the contrary, the Talmud seems to say they shouldn't give up their lives. The Talmud says that the rabbis made all kinds of institutions because there were these girls who you know, the Romans kept making decrees that no girl could get married without being raped by the Roman emperor or by the Roman governor. So there were girls who would give up their lives rather than have that happen. And the rabbis made institutions so that they wouldn't end up giving up their lives. Because they said, look, as unpleasant, as unfair as it is, at the end of the day, she shouldn't get killed over it. But Esther over here, according to that understanding, that leaves a lot of room to understand what's going on here. So maybe those commentaries don't go with that understanding that she was a married woman. That we'll have to say that they go with the understanding that she was single, the way the simple reading of the Megillah reads. Chazal, who tell us she was married, also say that Mordechai did his best, she should not enter the palace. But those are two different angles, how we approach the whole story. Yes? So from the verse we pointed out last time, it says the virgins and the women. So our sages say, what does it mean, the virgins and the women? It's telling you it wasn't only virgins. So every day, Mordechai comes to see what's going on with Esther. Our sages say that part of what Mordechai was doing was answering Esther's halachic questions. Esther would send her halachic questions to him. And the sages point out another point which blows our mind a little bit, that Esther would ask him the laws of family purity. She would ask him when it was considered that her period was on and when not, because there are different halachot. So you ask yourself, what do we care? So one understanding is, and this is a scary understanding, our sages say that even after Esther was wed to Ahasuerosh, legally, by Persian law, halachically she was still married to Mordechai. So the halacha views it as a married woman who's being taken by force by the king on a steady basis. So Mordechai and Esther, whenever it was possible, would be intimate together, the Talmud says. They did live as husband and wives. Isn't that interesting? You'd think they're risking their lives. So the Tosfos right away asks How could you do that? We have halacha that if a woman doesn't know whose child it is, so she shouldn't do that and enter a situation where you won't know who the child is. So Tosas answers, she was mishameshes b'moch, that the Talmud tells us there is a concept that a woman can put in a sponge inside herself to absorb the seed of a man, and then she knows that that man didn't impregnate her. So Tosas says, yeah, that's what Esther did when she was with Achashverosh. So Achashverosh could never father a child from Esther. So that gives us a basis for a large halachic discussion about birth control, what's permissible, what's prohibited. But at any rate, there's another idea here. So Esther wants to verify when she's halachically pure, when she's halachically defiled. Why is that relevant? Because a Jewish woman, even if she's going to be with a non-Jewish man, let's say there's a story, unfortunately, a Jewish woman married a non-Jewish man, and she still kept the laws of family purity. Her husband wasn't Jewish, he's not obligated, but she is halachically prohibited from being with her husband when she knows that she's defiled. So even though it's not a Jewish man, there's still a prohibition. So Esther, if she's going to have a choice which night she's going to be with Achashverosh, so Esther tried to align it with the nights that she knew that that there wasn't this added transgression as well. Yeah. She's halachically not allowed to be with any man when she's impure. Any man, no difference if it's her husband or anyone else. But the chiddush is it's also a non-Jew. Meaning if a Jewish woman marries a non-Jewish man, so every day there are many prohibitions that happen. But this is another one that they should, you know, we try to minimize prohibitions. Mordechai and Esther? That's the simple reading of the Gemara. Vati lo lebat, al tikri lebat, ela lebayit. That's what the Talmud says. Yeah, the Mordechai and Esther were married. But then again, the Talmud doesn't seem to indicate that Mordechai was interested in her getting up there. Quite the contrary. Mordechai did everything to avoid it. And when it happened anyways, Mordechai said, this is a sign. Now, we have to understand what that means, this is a sign. That means, Mordechai said, she is so modest. She is so careful in the area of modesty that even Hashem, who we don't understand the way he runs the world, but the nature of Hashem's running the world, and only Mordechai could understand that. We never understand what Hashem's doing, right? We look at the world and it's a mystery to us. Maybe in hindsight we could figure it out. But Mordechai was such a big person that he said, if Hashem made this happen to such a modest woman, so then there must be something amazing that has to happen out of this, because otherwise there's no other way of understanding. Why, how could this happen to her? So ordinarily we'd say, what kind of question is that? How do we know why Hashem does things? We know. The answer is, yeah, I guess on Mordechai's level he knew that Hashem works midah keneged midah, and this is a midah that she can't be, she deserves something. Now that's a point which the Talmud tells us in other places, that sometimes when a person's suffering and they gauge themselves, so then a person can figure out, do I deserve this person on a big level? Ordinarily we say, if you don't think you deserve it, then you deserve it because of bittul Torah, because you wasted time. That's something that everyone can find fault in. But let's say a person is so big that he knows, I didn't waste time, I utilized every minute I could for Torah, for mitzvahs, the way I should. So then if he's suffering in his life, the Talmud has a whole discussion about what goes on, how he's supposed to understand that, called Yisurin Shel Ahava, however we understand that. So you see, the Talmud does give us this indication that there are times that a person can gauge and realize his gauge is correct. Okay, so every girl gets brought into the king, and the girl gets whatever she wants, and then she gets put into the storage house of women, the second storage house, in case he'll ever want her again. Imagine what kind of life that is. You sit in a second harem your whole life, waiting, maybe the king will beckon, maybe he'll remember me. Couldn't go back home. Finished. That's it. The king slept with you. You're royal quality now. That's it. No going back home. So the women were stuck for the rest of their lives in this harem. I guess until Achashverosh died for 14 years. In the second harem, until the king remembers her and calls her by name. So you have to ask yourself, how many names did Achashverosh remember? He had to call her by name. Okay, so I guess he had a good memory. So it's Esther's turn. And Esther doesn't want anything. Whatever Haggai throws on her, she takes. And everyone likes her. And everyone liked her. That means that everyone was voting for her. They were rooting for her. All the servants. And this is part of the trait of a tzaddik. We mentioned the story of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and the monastery next to his yeshiva. When he passed away, one of the nuns asked the students, "Where's that old man?" And he told her he passed away, so the nun was upset, so they asked her, "How did you know him?" So she said, "Well, whenever he walked by here, he'd always tell us good morning. He was very pleasant to us." So yeah, even the nuns in the monastery appreciated who Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was. They appreciated there was a nice old man who treated them nicely. Esther was Noset Chen B'nei Kol Ro'ah. Everyone was voting for her to be queen. All the servants, all the way from the harem to the king's palace, whoever met her, she treated them in a way that they wanted her to succeed. They were rooting for her. And Esther is taken against her will. She's not interested. Tachashverosh in the month of Teves. It's the 7th year of his reign. It took him 4 years since he murdered Vashti. And our sages say, why does the Pasuk tell us it was the month of Teves? Because it was a cold month. And the nature of a person is that when it's cold, so he has more appreciation for the body heat, for being with someone else. And Hashem had everything set up exactly right so that Achashverosh would like Esther. And here, by the way, Michael, you start seeing some allusion in Chazal that Esther needed every help that she could get to be chosen queen. You know, if she was the most gorgeous woman like Vashti, and notice the pasuk doesn't say Esther was yifat toar v'yifat maret, doesn't say that. It says Esther had charm, Esther was noset chen. Doesn't say she was a beauty. Quite the contrary, our sages say she was far from beautiful. Doesn't say it. Look at the verse. Charm is when you don't have beauty. If you have beauty, you don't need charm. Charm is when you need to cover up. Wait, you can have both.
Talmud said that Esther was one of the most four beautiful women in the world.
Really? Show me.
Someone says, or something about the, this person, they say she has a great sense of humor. And you guys
are
not.
No.
Well, that's true.
I don't know.
You're ruining my poor story.
She was gorgeous, Michael. She was gorgeous. Everyone thought she was beautiful. Okay. So Achashverosh removes all the pictures he has all around the palace of Vashti because he never got over Vashti. He puts up a statue of Esther. He puts up pictures of Esther everywhere. And he tells her, "Tell me now, who's your family?" And she says, "A different time. You know the way women do it. We'll get to it." She beats around the bush. And he doesn't answer. And he tries to push her to the corner. And she doesn't. And she has one thing playing in her favor. She doesn't care if he kills her. From her perspective, she's not interested in being queen. And that's one of the best ways a woman can catch a man, when she's not really that interested. One of the mistakes women make is they show the man is that they're interested. Keep playing hard to get till you're 120. So, and Chazal say that. It's one of the pieces of advice that one of the rabbis gave his daughters when they got married. He said to her, certain things make available to your husband and certain things not. Even in the bedroom. Keep him asking for more. A person should always... No, it's one of the pieces of advice that unfortunately they don't teach women today. It's a... I don't teach women either, but maybe they'll see it online. It's a... Men want to chase, right? So Achashverosh has this situation where he senses she's not exactly, you know, she's not easy taking. So he makes a big party, and he names it the Party of Esther, and he tells her, look, if I knew who your family was, I could give them royal invitations. I could... he gives a tax break and calls it the Esther tax break. And he tells her, if I knew who your nation was, I could give him a bigger tax break. Nothing doing. He sends out gifts, royal gifts, in honor of the new marriage and the new queen. He sends everyone a royal gift. And he says, if you tell me who your family, who your nation is, I could give him more. Nothing. So he sees there's nothing he could do to get her. And everything that spoke to him in Vashti isn't speaking to her. So he turns to Mordechai and he says, Mordechai, tell me, how do you get to women? And Mordechai gives him the best advice, which we always have to remember. Mordechai tells him, in the words of the Talmud, "En isha mitkana ela beyerech chaverta." A woman isn't jealous of anything really, other than another woman. So get her thinking you're choosing another wife. So Achashverosh tells her, "Look, Esther, you're great, you're fantastic. I understand you don't want to tell me. We're going to make another pageant." So they start gathering virgins a second time. And Mordechai is standing behind the Achashverosh and signaling Esther, don't get in, don't get in. At the same time, he's telling Achashverosh the piece of advice. He's giving Esther the chizuk. He's telling her, don't give in, don't give in. He's there. That's why the pasuk juxtaposes. It says he made a second pageant and Mordechai was still there. It's telling us Mordechai was advising Achashverosh and advising Esther at the same time. And this is an important rule. I always say that we have no achati yonati tamati. What it says in the Song of Songs, a woman needs the feeling there is no competition. There's one thing a woman can't stand. It's the thought that there's something you like better. It could be your work, it could be the Torah, it could be anything. No, she has to be number one. And that's what Mordechai tells Achashverosh. But Esther stands firm. Mordechai is sitting at the king's gates. And big son and Seresh, they want to kill the king. Why do they want to kill the king? So one understanding is that Achashverosh had so much lust for Esther that he was with her over and over and over again, and he was repeatedly thirsty. And they started talking to one another. From the time that Esther came to this palace, we don't get a wink of sleep. Every second he's summoning us to bring him more wine and more water and more wine and more water. This man is a beast. He's never finished. We can't handle this. Another understanding is that Mordechai was appointed in their stead. They were bumped down the ranks. Initially, they were the ones sitting at the king's gates. And now they were bumped down. So they stand there in front of Moshe, in front of Mordechai, and they start talking in their language, and they assume, Mordechai, what does he know? But Mordechai was on the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin has to have the capacity to understand all 70 languages, even if they can't talk them, to at least understand it. So Mordechai hears them talking. He tells Esther. Esther tells the king in the name of Mordechai. In the name of Mordechai. So that needs a little bit of work. How did she get away with telling him in the name of Mordechai without him asking, and how do you know Mordechai? So they checked, and they see that the two really had put poison in the king's wine, and they give it to a dog to drink. He drops dead. They invite Big Son and Seresh to drink from it, and they obviously aren't interested in drinking from the poison they put in his wine. And so the two are hung. And the Talmud says another good thing about Achashverosh, he would always record anyone that did him a favor. How many times do we get gifts and we don't send thank you notes? So the Chazal say again, look at the positive thing in Achashverosh. He always recorded who he owes a thank you to, and that's what saved the day in the end of the day. That Esther said it in the name of Mordechai. So again, this shows us humility. We always like to take credit. And the Mishnah and the Talmud say that redemption comes to the world when you're willing to give credit to the one who said it. And the fact that he also wanted to give credit, the idea of giving thanks. And here we come to the theme of Purim, the hidden Esther, the thanks, the appreciation, which is what we do on Purim. We also show thanks and appreciation, and we are out of time.